Thank you, love.
Love you. Okay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Shirley Templin, and I'm an alcoholic. Boy, it's great to be back up here. I don't know how long it's been since I've been here, but it brought back a lot of memories when we pulled in this afternoon, and, you know, I just feel like this is home. It's just an awesome, serene place. If you don't believe God's not here right now, you need to go find, you need to go somewhere else, as he's here. I want to thank the committee for inviting my little fella and me to come up here and share our experience, strength, and hope. You know, Bo is my driver. He drove me to drinking. He drove me to treatment and drove me up here. He drives me crazy. But anyway, this past Monday, April 30th, we celebrated 54 years of marriage. And I don't remember all of those, but he does, every single one of them. And, I was sick that day. I was sick. I just couldn't do anything. And I thought to myself, of all those many, 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 many years when I was hungover on an anniversary, I think I was sicker this time than I ever was before. But anyway, it just brought back so many memories of when I get to feeling better, buddy, I'm going to take advantage of it. But we do thank you for having us here. It's going to be a good weekend. It's so great to see Bob. I met Bob early on in my recovery and been a part of it ever since. And he's a fantastic man. Good AA. I love you. I'm going to start out like the big book says, share with you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. My birthday is July the 29th, 1982. And that might not seem like a lot to you, but it just tickles the mess out of me. Every year when I get that chip, it makes me feel so proud to know that I'm a part of something today that has saved my life and so many others. And I'm right here in the middle of it today. When I was 13, my parents divorced, and I'm not going to give you a lot of story about that. I was 13. We moved in with my grandparents, and when I was 14, I started high school, and my life started changing. And when I was 15, I went out on a blind date with Bo, and I fell in love with him that night. Took me 5 years to get him, but we dated for 5 years, and during this time, he came from divorced parents during this period of time, and of course, I'm from divorced parents, and we talked a lot about getting married, and if we married and had children, we did not want our children to grow up without one of the parents. So we really talked about it a lot, about are we going to make this thing work? Is it going to work? And we decided that we loved each other, and that was the main ingredient. So we married, and I'd like to tell you that at the church, my dad was supposed to come and give me away, and he showed up drunk, and I'm walking down the aisle crying, and I'm sure everybody's saying, oh, she's just so happy, she's crying. Well, I was crying because my daddy left me at the back of the church, and my little brother had to walk me down the aisle. But, you know, today he claims he's the reason we're together, and that's okay. We were two young kids madly in love, starting out on something called the Great American Dream. We had no idea what this world was about. We didn't know what life was about. He had a good job, I had a good job. And the first year we were married, we bought a little house with 3 bedrooms, 1 bath, and 2 driveways, and great big backyard fenced in with a tree right in the middle of it. And you go by that house today, right after the grass has been cut, and you can see the figure eight in the back of the yard where I let my kids learn how to drive because I didn't want them out on the street. Little things like that. We tried, and the first anniversary, no children. Second wedding anniversary, no children. Third wedding anniversary, Bo pulled up in my driveway in a little red 2-door Thunderbird. That'd get your attention. Bucket seat, swing away steering wheel, candy apple red. And on the way home from work one day, I was in someone's blind spot, and he scraped me all the way down the driver's side of the car. And we called the police, got the report, went home, got Bo out of the den and showed him where the scratch was, and he said, "You need to go to the doctor." And I said, "Well, I'm fine, I really am." He's, "No, go and let him check you, make sure that you're okay." So I went to the doctor. Back then, you did not make appointments. You went in, you signed in, and you waited for them to call you back. No cell phones, none of that. And so my message to Bo was, as soon as I know something, I'll call you. About 12 o'clock, the doctor finally got to me, and he wanted to know what's wrong. And I said, "Well, I just had a little fender bender, and Bo wants you to check me out." And he said, "Come on, we'll do some tests." So we go back, and he runs these tests. And when he gets through, he says, "Go in my office and sit down in one of those two chairs in front of my desk and sit for me. I'll be right in, and we'll talk." And I said, "About what?" And he said, "Just don't worry about that. Just go sit on in front of my desk, and I'll be in there in a minute." So I did that, and I sat down in one of those chairs, and a few minutes later, he comes in, and he pulls up a chair right beside me instead of going over behind his desk facing me, and he tapped me on the knee, and he said to me, "Shirley, you're 2 months pregnant." And I said, "From the wreck?" And I said, "What did you say?" And he said, "You're pregnant." And I said, "I can't tell Bo." And he said, "Get him on the phone." Well, at that time, he worked in the parts department where everybody hears everything. And so I dialed him up, and as soon as I got Bo on the phone, I handed the phone to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Bo, this is the doctor." And said, "I checked Shirley over from head to toe, and she's 2 months pregnant." And Bo said, "From the wreck?" Well, that little wreck's name was Mike. He was born November the 10th of that year, a little blonde-headed, blue-eyed hunk. And then I had another wreck, and her name's Sissy. And she's brown-headed and brown-eyed, and we'll talk about her later. But we had one boy and one girl. That's all the variety they had. So we didn't have any more kids. And in order to live the great American dream, I needed to go back to work. We needed that payday. So I went back to work and happened to join with a bunch of ladies at lunch that were members of a sorority. Never got to do that when I was in high school. So I joined. I went through the initiation, and on one Saturday night with the kids with the babysitter, we drive down to this little place right outside of Hueytown on the river. And you pull up into this lady's gorgeous home. The moon is just setting as we get there. There's a gentle breeze. It's late August. There's a live band. There's an open bar. And we arrive. Now, I never had a drink in my hand whatsoever. Bo did not drink. But sometime during that next couple of hours, he walked up to me with a drink. And he said to me, "Here, honey, drink this." Well, you know, I'm going to do what he tells me to do. And it was a real tall glass, about oh so, with a little color of pink to it. It had a toothpick across the top with a maraschino cherry with a stem, slice of orange and a pineapple, slice of pineapple, and an umbrella in that glass, and a straw. And I can't tell you anything except I took a swig. Now, I don't know what people really do when they drink, but I took a swig, and Boy, it tasted really good, you know. And then I took another swig. And long about time, three or four swigs, you know, my knees start knocking and my fingers start tingling. And there's places on my body that started tingling that had never tingled before. And it was a Tom Collins. And I loved it. I had another one. And, you know, I never did have a problem with the taste. Well, I came home and I'd go to these sorority meetings once a month, and really all they were is just plan a party and a dance and drink and then go home. And one night Bo said, "I don't really know if I want you to be a part of something like that." So I resigned. I wasn't even in there a year. I didn't even get to plan a party on my own. With my own thoughts and themes and stuff. I didn't stay long enough. But anyway, what I missed was the drinking. Now, I'm an alcoholic who has never been in jail. I didn't run around. I've never had a DUI. I've never awakened in a strange bed. Never had a wreck. But everything that I did in my kitchen on 28th Avenue in Hueytown, Alabama, and I did more damage to my children than I believe I could have ever done if I'd left the house. When I would drink to a certain point, I would just pass out. And they would used to cover me up, but then it got to where they didn't do that anymore. And I missed ball games. My kids were late to school an awful lot. I didn't do an awful lot of cooking. It's whatever I wanted is what we had. I didn't realize how selfish, self-centered I was till I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. But I would get in from work at 4:30 and I would start drinking. And then by 7 o'clock, you know, the party's over. And that left Bo to take care of homework and blue jeans and finish whatever dinner I had started, and that's how we existed for a long time. There was no communication in our home. The deal was, if you can't say something good, don't say anything at all. So we didn't say anything at all. My daughter's left-handed, and she could never load the dishwasher right, and she could never fold clothes right. And so I told her one day, if you can't do them right, don't do it. And she quit doing it. It was awful. Bo would end up sleeping in the big recliner chair in the living room, and I thought he was having problems with somebody at work, and, you know, he just had to deal with that himself. I came to one morning and looked in the mirror in the bathroom, and I did not know who was in the mirror. My face was all bloodshot, I mean, blushing. My eyes were bloodshot red. My hair was like steel wool. I didn't want to live anymore. And I looked in the mirror and I said, you know, God, I don't remember the last time Bo has told me that he loved me. And you know, God, I don't remember the last time Mike put his arms around me and told me I smell good. And God, I don't remember the last time Sissy gave me a compliment. And I looked back into this mirror, talking to a God that I did not know. And God said to me, Shirley, when was the last time you told Bo you loved him? Shirley, when was the last time you put your arms around Mike and told him he smelled good? Shirley, when was the last time you gave Sissy a compliment? We didn't do stuff like that anymore. My children were growing up with an alcoholic mom that we didn't know what was wrong with her. So many situations. Bo played fast pitch softball for a total of 28 years. He was playing ball when I met him. And on weekends, he would fly all over the southeast by jet to go play ball at different places. And he would leave on Friday afternoon, and he'd come home late on Sunday night. And, you know, I can't tell you standing here how many times my kids didn't get anything that weekend. But I drank. My kids started playing ball just like their dad, and I couldn't seem to make it to the ball games. I couldn't remember to wash the ball uniforms. I just had a hard time keeping up. And it was in July of 1982 when my family was going to one more ball game and they didn't want me to go. Mike was 15. Sissy was 13. They were pretty much on their own. They pretty well self-supporting through their own contributions. The only time I could ever get them to do anything for me was to pay them. And that was about the only way I could get them to do anything. But anyway, Cece and Beau were already in the car ready to leave. Mike forgot something in his room, and I've got a glass in this hand ready to drink as soon as they leave, because see, I could do that while they were gone and I wouldn't have to worry about anything. And I was going to close the door with this hand, and just as soon as they got out of that driveway, I'd be off and running. And just as Mike got to the door, and he was about a half of a head taller than me, he looked at me and he said, "Hey, Mom, when we get home tonight, are you going to be passed out on the floor or passed out in the bed?" And that made me so mad, so mad. And I got this hand right here to slap his teeth out. I did. I absolutely was on slapping. And just as my hand got right here, the scene flashed of the last time my daddy came home drunk and woke me up in the middle of the night, took me out of the bedroom, took me in the den, and beat me with a belt buckle in the belt. And I hollered at him and I said, "Dad, if God ever allows me to have children, I swear I'll never lay a hand on them. And y'all, I'm fixing to lay a hand on my little boy." Well, the slap didn't have to happen. That was one night I took it from my mom one more time, because if it hadn't been me, it would have been my mom. And they went to the ball game, and as they left the driveway, I closed the front door and went to freshen up my drink when I saw on the screen of the TV that was not on a telephone number of a treatment center. And I put the glass down, and I dialed this 1-800 number, and it was 40 miles from Birmingham at Brookwood Treatment Center. And so I talked to this lady for an hour, and we decided that I needed to wait until the next day to come up. I was in no shape to go that night. So I put down the phone, I put down that drink. I think that was my last one. But when Beau and the kids came in, I met them at the door and told them I was going to do something about my drinking. And of course, you know what they said, "Oh yeah, Mom, yeah, yeah, yeah." Beau walks in and I tell him, and he said, "Well, let's see now, young lady, this is 1,382. What's different about this?" And he took a shower and went to bed. And the next day, the treatment center called him at work to get more insurance information. And he called me crying and he said, You really did ask for help this time, didn't you?" And I said, "Beau, I don't want to live anymore. I can't deal with it anymore. I'm in a house where no one cares anything about me, and I know why, and I don't know what to do about it." And so they took me to treatment, and I thought it was going to be for 30 days, 28 days, and it was 38, and I'm grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that treatment center. I hadn't eaten in 6 months. I looked like skin and bone. I looked like I just needed to be put in the ground. And if you'd done that, I'd probably been okay. But I went up to treatment, and I don't remember an awful lot other than one particular session with the kids and Beau with my counselor. And the counselor asked, "Mike, what do you want to do with your mom?" And he said, "Well, I don't know, but I don't want another mother. I want this same mom. I just don't want to drink anymore." And the counselor went to Cece and asked her, said, "What do you want to do with your mom?" And she said, "I don't know, but I'm tired of being the mom. I'd like to be somebody's little girl. I'd like to be tucked in bed at night instead of having to tuck my drunk mother in bed. I'd like for my mom to brush my hair instead of me having to go across the street to Bonnie's. I'd like for my mom to get me to school on time." And I did all those things. And then the counselor went to Beau and asked him and said, "What do you want to do with your wife?" And he said, "I don't know. I've done everything in the world I know to do. I'd have hawked everything I owned to get her some help." And at first, when he took me to treatment, he told them that they could have me. But the counselor said, "Oh, let us keep her for a little while. You'll change your mind, because there are miracles." And Beau said, "There are no such thing as miracles in my life." But anyway, I stayed 38 days, and I came home Labor Day weekend of 1982, and we were directed to go to the Bessemer Group in Bessemer, Alabama, where I have been a member since. I have not found it necessary to move to another home group. It's got everything I need there. We're 69 years old, and that's my home. And I have met a lady there that met me there who had been sober 2 years. In fact, she was at our wedding anniversary, our wedding, and in the reception, everybody kept talking about how pretty Katie looked because she hadn't had a drink in 2 years. And I said, don't y'all realize this is my wedding day? Don't y'all realize my daddy's left me at the back of the church and y'all are talking about how Katie's been sober 2 years? I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. But Katie was my sponsor. And she was a tough old lady. She was the sweetest thing in the world. She didn't have any children, but she had 8 brothers and sisters, and buddy, she knew how to deal with kids. And we started on this journey. And what a journey it's been. I just worshiped her. I could tell her anything. And we could sit at the Bessemer Group on Saturday afternoons and go through the steps. So we get in here and we start getting better. We asked the kids to go to Alateen for a month, and they went. Mike said, it's not for me. I'm not sitting in there telling how all these god-awful things have happened because they're not happening anymore. Sissy fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. She's 48 years old. 49 years old. She's came into Alateen when she was 13, came right on into Al-Anon, and she has 35 years in Alateen and Al-Anon. Let me share this with you. When you live in a home where there's active alcoholism, you're affected. When you live in a home where the principles of this program are practiced, you're affected. And my little boy did not go to Alateen meetings, but my little boy had a program. He never missed any of my birthdays. He would say, I'm going to come for the cake. I love the cake, Mother. I love the cake. But we got started. We started doing the things that we were supposed to do. Slowly but surely, things started turning around in the Templin family. We get into a lot of conventions. That's where we met Bob and Juanita at a convention. You know, I'm so grateful that Katie and Jim took us places like they did. I got home from treatment September 4th, 82, and the end of September, we were in a convention in Panama City. I mean, we did not let grass grow under our feet. She said, go, and we went. We had a travel trailer. All of those couples around in there had travel trailers or motor homes, and we'd go and park at a state park, And I remember one of them, we had enough money for 2 nights to stay, and then we had $3.50 each for the kids for the arcade machine. We took the groceries out of the refrigerator in the kitchen and put them in the motor home, which was 2 months behind on payments. We had enough on Shell to use for gas, and we had the best time we've ever had in our life. I think that's the icing on the cake of the conventions and the roundups and the things where you get to people, meet people, not in a meeting, so to speak. You get to meet real people and hear about their stories and their lives and what's going on with them and their kids and their grandkids. And anyway, so we were making these different changes in our life and coming up on 5 years of sobriety, and we were going to take our first vacation. Let's see, I got to tell you about Mike's graduation. He flunked that whole year of school, that year I was drinking, that last year of my drinking. So in September, when I came home from treatment, he had to repeat that grade all over that he had just flunked. And did he have a resentment or hold any anger or anything toward me about it? No. He said, I'll just repeat it, Mom, no big deal. Sissy made the honor roll. And she had told everybody at school when she was supposed to come to junior high, she wouldn't be there this time. She was contemplating suicide. Now go figure. So I come home Labor Day weekend and that's what I've got, but I'm not aware of the suicide. till 2 years when she spoke at Mountaintop, and we heard her speak there. So anyway, Mike graduated a year later, and we had a big graduation party, and you should have seen it. It was absolutely unbelievable. People hanging out the windows. I've never seen so many people in all my life. And at one point, Mike had his robe on, and he said, "Mom, I need to talk to you in my bedroom." And I said, "Okay, just a minute, just a minute." "No, right now, I need to talk to you." Well, see, I'd made all those amends to him. I made all those amends to her. Katie had me do all those. And so he said, "It's it. We got to go talk." So we go by the front door, and there's 5 cans of beer sitting on the front step. And, you know, sometimes I'm not real smart. And I said to Mike, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, Mom, there's 5 of my buddies who wanted to come to my party, and told them we didn't allow alcohol in our home anymore. And they'll pick it up on their way out, I promise you." So off to his bedroom we go, and he motions for me to sit down on the bed, and as he does, he turns and closes the door. And I'm thinking, there's an amends I haven't made. I know there's something I hadn't done. And he looked at me and he said, "Mom, I want to tell you 3 things. Number 1, I want to thank you for being sober. I want to thank you for not drinking anymore. Because, Mom, I would not be graduating tonight. I would not still be living at home. I would not be going to Florida for 2 weeks after I graduate tonight, and I wouldn't have a job waiting on me when I got back. Thank you. And number 2, Mom, it's been for a long time, this little glass wall up between us, and you know it's time for that glass wall to come down. You blame yourself for that year I blunked." And I said, "Yes, I did, because I caused you to miss. And you couldn't concentrate, and you couldn't study, and you were late to school." He said, "Mom, that has nothing to do with this. I used your drinking as an excuse." Sissy made the honor roll. "And when I get that diploma tonight, I'm going to look at you with thumbs up, and I don't want anything ever to be said about that year I flunked, right?" I said, "Okay." And I started to get up, and he said, "I thought I said 3 things. And I thought of the promises in the big book, and I thought, you know, they had started coming true in my life, but I had no idea of the enormity. It just absolutely took my breath away when I was thinking about what was happening with me that moment. When Mike looked at me and he said, 'No matter how many little girls I date, Mom, you'll always be my number 1 girl.' Where do you get that? In rooms like this, full of people like us." Well, Cece had just finished her year of college, and she decided she'd go back to school for Mike. And we asked her to live at home. We'd buy her a new car if she would live at home instead of living on campus. She took the new car and moved back to school. Her sponsor had something to do with that, I know. And so she 3 years she graduated. And at graduation, she came up to me and her dad, and she said, "I want to come home. Can I come home?" So I went to Katie, and I said, "What do I do?" And she said, "Well, she'll let you know if you're smothering her. Just do what you've been doing. She'll tell you." So she moved home, and she's 25 years old. And she's dating, and she's dating a lot of losers. I mean, we finally gave her a roll of quarters, because she ended up every night, she had a date, we'd have to go pick her up somewhere. And then she started dating this guy, and I asked her one day, I said, "Cece, have you and God talked about," because she said, "When am I going to get married? I would like to know if God's got a man for me." And I said, "Well, yeah, he's got a... God's working on that right now, how true I was," and he wasn't through. But I said, "What have you and God talked about?" And she said, "Well, it's this very simple. I don't want anybody with a ponytail. I don't want anybody with an earring. And I don't want anybody with kids from a previous marriage." And I said, "Well, you're going to be an old maid. You won't ever marry." And so, she said, "Well," she said, "you know," called me one day and said, "Well, his divorce is final. You know, I'm from the old school. That just kind of blew me away. I said, his what? His divorce is final, so we go out tonight. So anyway, they dated, and he walked up the door, and he had a ponytail, and he had an earring, and he had two children by a previous marriage. And so they dated about a year, and then they dated, and they married. I did not tell y'all about Mike. Sissy started college, and she had finished her first year of college. Mike was living at home. This was on my fifth AA birthday. And Bo was working at the Fellowship House in Birmingham. She had a date because she was home from school. And Mike and I were going to meet back at the house at 10 for a tuna sandwich after my 8 o'clock meeting in Bessemer. The next week, we were going on vacation to Washington, D.C. on the Amtrak. And at 9:05 that night, May 17, 1988, Mike was killed instantly by a drunk driver. And you want to have the wind knocked out of your sail. I went to the phone, and I called Katie, and Bo went to the phone, and he called Fran and Jim, and they came right over, and I don't, for 72 hours, I don't know what happened. I know that Katie made a list on the legal pad of every girl at Bessemer for shifts of 3 hours each, and they would come over to the house with one thing to do, and that was take care of me. Wash my face, give me a piece of cheese and bread, take me to the bathroom, but I was not to be out of their sight. My husband was in the bedroom loading a shotgun to go kill a drunk driver. We had people at our house for 72 hours nonstop. I mean, there was somebody there all the time. And if Katie had not done that with those girls, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. You know, people would come by the house and want to pick me up and take me to a meeting, and I didn't want to go. We didn't have call forwarding or anything back then, and the phone would ring, and I wouldn't answer it. You know, I just kind of closed up. I just gave up. Bo and Sissy sat me down and said they saw some things in me that didn't, that bothered to them. And I needed to go back to the treatment center where I had been previously, but for grief therapy. That's another good thing. That's another good choice in my life. You know, in the big book, it says that's why we have doctors and lawyers and financial advisors and all this kind of stuff, because AA don't treat that. So I went back to my treatment center for 12 weeks for grief therapy. Okay, now I'm back where Cece is graduating, and she and Bob get married, and you should have seen that wedding we had in the church where Bo and I married. My counselor at treatment married them, wearing a black Catholic robe, doing a Methodist wedding ceremony. The place was packed. We had the two children in the wedding. One was ring bearer, one was flower girl. We lit a candle in memory of Mike because he's just in another room. We opened it with a serenity prayer. We closed it with the Lord's Prayer. We did everything, and to this day, 17 years later, my husband still has a resentment at me because I wouldn't let him pass the basket. He said, man, I got a crowd here tonight. I can get this money back. Because, see, Bob, bless his heart, you know, when she married Bob, he didn't have anything but his clothes and a truck and two kids. And that'll tell you about that situation. So we had this big house in Hueytown, and by this time with a pool, and we were gone so much traveling. When we come home, we have to catch up on the grass, have to catch up on everything. And we decided, after Sissy moved out and nobody was coming to see us anymore, that we would sell it and downsize and move out and get ready for retirement in a one-floor house in the country. Folks always want to live in the country. And so we found some property down in West Blotton. And Bob and Sissy said, well, you have to take us with you. Lord, have mercy. I said, two houses. We will not live in one house. That was one of the greater things I had in my decisions I had in my life. But we found some property out there on the top of a hill, and we put Bob and Cece a house at the bottom, Bo and Shirley at the top. It's called Serenity Hill, because any good day, if you ride out there, you might just find a little bit of serenity. We love it. No neighbors, no nothing. We moved out there, and immediately Cece had an aneurysm on her brain. And where did Bo and Shirley go? Right back to, you've got Mike, God, please don't take Cece. And we were out of town when we got the news. Pouring down rain, terrible weather, was getting worse as we headed toward Birmingham. Bo's driving, he's beating on the steering wheel, cussing God. And I'm sitting over there in the passenger seat, and all of a sudden this hand just comes down on my shoulder and whispers in my ear, Shirley, Cece's going to be okay. She's going to be okay. Now take the wheel from Bo before you two die. And I don't drive good in sunshine weather, y'all, so I darn sure don't drive good in rainy weather. But I told him to pull over and let me drive, and he said, what just happened to you? And I said, I just heard this little voice tell me in my ear Cece was going to be okay. And she was. Picture perfect surgery. I'm so grateful for that. In 2007, Bob died of a massive heart attack, just sitting there in his chair with a big book in his hand and a Mountain Dew in his hand. Just died. And when the coroner got there, the big book was still there and the Mountain Dew was still there. That's the way I want to go, y'all. I mean, I want right there, you know, not bother anybody. So that was tough getting through. He was 49 years old. And so we're out there in that little place on the hill, and one afternoon after this, a little black lab just walks up our driveway. Prettiest little thing you've, 120 pounds. And she had the effects of a collar, but not a collar. She was clean. She had no ticks or fleas. She was not hungry. Someone had dropped her off at the bottom of that driveway. And she comes up, and she's solid black, except just a little bit of white here. So we put all telephone poles all over West Blockton, at the grocery store, at the service station. Anybody lost a 120-pound black lab, nobody claimed her. So we adopted her, and we named her Spook. She would sit there with me in the mornings when I would do my prayer and meditation. She knew the serenity prayer. She'd lay there, yes. And then I'd read my readings, and I'd look at her, and I'd say, you ready for the Lord's Prayer? Prayer. And then she'd get up, and I'd say, you ready to go for a walk? And she'd go to the bookcase and get a leash, and we'd go for a walk. Every night, she got one scoop of vanilla ice cream with sprinkles, and she would eat the vanilla ice cream and push the sprinkles out, and then she'd go back and eat in each individual one of those sprinkles. I had a little white convertible, and when I come in from work, I had to put the top down and put her in, and she put her paws on the console and her head above the windshield and say, go fast, Granny, go fast. Now, we've had some illnesses out there in West Blockton. My husband's had a major surgery on his back, but I'm going to talk to you a little bit about me. My grandmother died at 50, my mom at 60, and I'm 73. I'm in stage 4 of kidney disease, polycystic kidneys. I'm just that far from going on to a kidney dialysis. And I understand I will be able to take it at home, but will hook me up at night and I'll have it all night. And you better believe your sweet Bippy, I won't ever get mad at him. If he's going to be in trouble. But anyway, I've had a couple of rough times the last couple of years of not feeling well and hurting and all. And I've got this great doctor. I really admire him, and I just think the world of him. And he knows I'm in AA. He knows I've been sober for 35 years. And I go to him every 3 months, and every 3 months he pats me on the back and tells me how proud he is of me and that I'm going to be okay. And then I course, go back into debt. It's going to happen, and I'm not going, what am I going to do, and this, that, and the other. But, you know, I'll tell you about my alcoholism. I had a very fatal disease called alcoholism. And I'm standing up here in front of you tonight with 35 years of sobriety. I'd say I beat that today. I'd say that today, I'm sober today. I've gotten through that. You know, my husband never gave up on me when I was drinking. He never left. He never kicked me out. He never divorced me. I never heard him say anything. When I'd pass out, one day I asked him what he told the kids whenever I was passed out, and he said, I told the kids you were sick. He never called me a drunk. And now I've come along and I've got this little thing called kidney disease. And y'all, I want to tell you something. I'm going to beat it. Because, you know, I've been a winner long enough to know that all I've got to do is do what is instructed for me to do. In fact, the first time I went back to the doctor, he said there were some things I really had to do. And I went to him. I'd lost 9 pounds. I had not gone anywhere on that chart. And he said, what in the world have you done? I said, well, you told me what I was supposed to do. He said, when do patients start listening to their doctors? And I said, well, that's when I told him I was in Alcoholics Anonymous and that I had to learn by taking suggestions from sponsors and people in this program if I wanted to make it. And he said, and you did that? And I said, yes, sir. So for a year, every time he tells me to do something, I do it. Because you see, I want to live, y'all. I don't want to leave. I'm a very blessed lady tonight. You'd have to go far and beyond anything I could imagine to find a lady that's any more grateful to be sober tonight than me. I'm blessed. I've got 4 hunks in my life. My husband, the father of my children, my driver, my counselor, my lover. We have such a good time today since I've retired. We just crazy stuff. Sleep till noon. Get up in the middle of the night and get a cheese sandwich. I mean, unbelievable. Second hunk in my life is the brightest star up there in the sky, Mike. And he'd been just as fine a daddy and just as fine a husband because he was a chip off the old block. Third hunk is old Bob Country. Come rolling into my daughter's life, not on a white steed, but on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with 5 years of good sponsor, go-to meeting, big book, sobriety. And the last one is Ronnie Millsap, a guy that would write songs and sing them. And he wrote this song that I'm going to close with for the people of Nashville for giving him a chance at doing what he does best. The drink that my husband put in my hand that night in that sorority party was a Tom Collins. The producer of this song is Tom Collins. When they started to record it, the drummer would quit playing because he had a family member dying. And they'd get to the chorus and he'd stop. And so finally Ronnie Millsap said after the 7th or 8th take, this next one goes to the radio station. We can't stay here all night. So I'm going to close with this verse that will sum up Shirley Temple to a T. And it goes like this. What a difference you made in my life. What a difference you made in my life. You're my sunshine day and night. Oh, what a difference you made in my life. That's my AA. Thank you, and God bless.